This is the Galaxy Wars podcast with your host, The Grays. Greetings and welcome back to mission number 26 of the Galaxy Wars podcast, the only podcast where you can hear the actual vacuum of space and Astro the Space Dog live every episode with us. This is mission number 26, and we are moving into the world of bad ideas. And for those of you new to the podcast, we are your hosts, The Grays, Jim and Tom, and bad ideas happen all the time. We've both made bad ideas. I would say my last two girlfriends were very bad ideas. But then there's a world where we make ideas and we continue to make those same bad ideas. To many listeners, me doing a podcast is probably a bad idea that I continue to do. But here we are. We found a group. Well, mainly you found a group, Tom.
Well, yeah.
A Facebook group called Science Fiction. And you did all the work and said, give me your top five, or give me your worst ideas as far as sci-fi goes. And sci-fi, along with horror, are probably the two genres that I think of when I hear bad ideas.
Yeah.
Like horror. Like
horror's got a ton of them.
Like, don't open the door.
Yeah.
Don't answer the phone. Close the door. Like, stuff like that.
Or just like...
Don't separate. Don't ever separate.
Yeah. Just separate or run towards a house, the dark, scary house.
It's like that Geico commercial. I think it's Geico. Yeah. Where they're like, oh, we'll just go into this house full of chainsaws. Yeah. I always think that that's true to horror fans. But we're here to talk about science fiction. And we took 10 topics and 10 bad ideas from the science fiction group on Facebook. And we're going to talk about them.
Yep.
And we're also going to possibly give you some of our worst ideas if they didn't already make the list, which is really cool. So, Tom, what's your first bad idea that you you think that sci-fi should just stop doing in general?
I'm going to give shout outs to the people that I that came up with some of the ideas I found on there. There is a guy, Marvin Price, and he really killed it. He came up with like three really good ideas. I'm only going to get into one.
He had the longest comment, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like a nice comment thread, but no, actually, that was somebody else.
Because I remember you commented on somebody and said, very thorough.
Yeah.
Okay.
That guy was thorough, but he had, and I'll find him and I'll give him a little shit, because he had like, he put 10 up there like fast. Like as soon as I wrote the post, he was out there real quick.
We should have got him on this episode.
Yeah. But Marvin Price, he wrote, people just finding other spaceships in space.
Yeah.
He's like, it's space. It's like, you know, infinite, and then just people just randomly stumble into a spaceship that they've been looking, that either they've been looking for or has been lost for centuries, but it's like, you know, just randomly. He's like, I can't find my keys, but
yeah,
people are finding spaceships in infinite space. So
no,
he wrote a lot of them, but that was a really good one. I liked.
I think, isn't that like the premise for the oh my god, the Galaxy Quest movie?
Yeah.
Or not Galaxy Quest, Lost in Space.
Yeah.
Where
they
find that alien ship.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, we've seen it in the shows that we've talked about as far as...
well, Star Trek, it's huge.
God,
Star Wars, well, the novels, that was a big thing in a lot of the books. They would find, like, old Star Destroyers and stuff like
that's
that.
That's how the Force Awakens starts. Rey's living in a Star Destroyer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's one of those things, like... And it's one thing to find them, to find these ships, these huge ships... It's another thing to explore them.
Yeah.
So if they're lost, they're potentially lost for a reason. And it's not a good reason. It's not like, oh, you know what? We decided to go to Cabo and spend some time there and we'll come back.
Well, yeah, they get attacked and they drifted or something. And that's it's the crossover of what we just talked about.
Yeah.
It's like the horror sci-fi this ship's abandoned, but nothing's wrong with it. Like,
yeah.
No, nobody blew it up, so... Let's go on it and walk around for 3 hours and see what's going on in here.
And you get we'll go back to Star Trek Discovery, essentially, where the first episode, Michael finds the Klingon, destroyer, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, let me go out there and explore. Like, don't go explore these things. Like, it's ridiculous. So I agree 100% with Marvin, because that's one of those things that You know, it's lost for a reason. You don't find abandoned cars on the side of the road or on the highway. You don't immediately say, oh, I want to go look in their car.
Right.
It's unless you're walking and you're going to steal a car, you go look in the car. But in space, you know, you're already on your own vehicle. There's no sense in going to, yeah. to get on it. That's a great one. Mine came from a man named Kyle. And Kyle took one from my list, but I'm going to give him credit for it. Landing on a planet without a spacesuit,
yeah.
To protect you. In what world is that right. the right way to do it? Because they assume that everything's Earth-like, so we're going to go and explore it.
Yeah. You know, some people, like, well, you know, they scanned it, but that wasn't always, yeah. you know, that was pretty new.
Yeah.
But
did they really scan it?
No.
No. I think Ridley Scott is one of the biggest culprits to this. Later with his Alien franchise.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because Prometheus...
Yeah, actually, you know what I think about? They were all those planets. And they all looked like the atmospheres would be green, but they would just land on the planet yep. and be all right. They were all like that.
Yeah, and their whole thing is like, don't step on things. You're not always going to be looking at the ground. Because right. if you look at the ground, you're going to walk into something, and that's where the problem is. And then we see in the movies, they step on these pods and these egg sacs, and
yeah.
the spores get up there, and they're just like, oh, breathe in that air. You've been on a ship for years. Breathe in that air, and they're taking deep, deep breaths, and you're like, what the hell are you doing? But that made my list, because I would never assume that every planet is kind of like an Earth-like planet, and yeah. thinking that, oh, I can get out there and it'd be oxygen. And regardless if they scanned it or not, you know, you don't know how foreign that planet is. And, like,
right.
maybe it could be like that episode of the Orville where they're flying through space and that planet just happens to appear.
Yeah.
And it's never appeared before, which that episode was really cool. But you go there and that episode, that planet could just appear.
Yeah.
Because of a timeline difference.
Yeah,
or
it
like
just, it bridges the gap beam between
yeah.
the multiverse.
And then you go in there, and you're like, "Oh, I'm hoping it's oxygen. I'm going to take this
gamble."
Yeah,
I mean, we have to give a lot of things like creative and difference. Like, okay, well, they're you know, they have to make a TV show, and they have to have plots. And,
yeah.
You know, there's some things we need to ignore, and that, yeah, some things we do, and you know, we overlook a certain amount of things, but that is kind of a blaring.
Yeah, and especially when the genre is. Called science fiction.
Yeah.
Like I get the fiction part, but science is the leader.
Right.
And you want to make sure it's plausible, because the fans, and I've noticed it from the Facebook group that we're on, the fans are rabid.
Yeah.
And they want it done right, because this list carried close to 800 comments that we received, and that's more than any listens on any host that we've had. It's more listens than we've been getting. So this is a devoted fan base that wants the science yeah. to be more than the fiction.
Well, that's what I was trying to get to before about like the difference between Star Wars
yeah.
and Star Trek, or you know,
Star Wars and science fiction.
Science fiction is they are just in space. That's yeah. not enough. You have to have some kind of science. Now, whether the science is good or bad, ultimately all science fiction leads to bad science
yeah.
because we can't get to that point.
Exactly.
But you know, there's got to be, you know, science has to be a thread going throughout it.
Yeah, and it's like we've talked about this from the early episodes, even just once that maybe never made it onto our SoundCloud. But when we look at IMDb and we look at the categories that some of these movies that we really enjoy are, and we think action and maybe adventure, and they go right into sci-fi. Sci-fi is always the leader, like the Avengers,
yeah,
and Iron Man and stuff like that. Most people are like, oh, that's not science fiction. It's absolutely science fiction.
Yeah, well, I think
the whole suit's based on science.
There is, I think, you know, it's where do we draw the line? Is Captain America getting his powers through a super serum?
Yeah, created by science.
That's science fiction.
Yeah.
The Scarlet Witch is not science fiction.
Yeah.
But then it depends on how you think she got her powers.
Yeah,
but
if you go into, like, the mutant gene, then yeah. that could be, you know, but, like, Black Widow is not, she's an assassin.
Yeah.
There's nothing special about her other than she was trained.
Yeah.
So her and like Hawkeye, stuff
yeah.
like
that. So it's a mix of, it's definitely a mix of fantasy. That's why it's good just to call the comic book genre.
Yeah.
You know, it creates its own genre, and it's, you know, that's where it belongs, because it does mix everything. Now, I think like Black Panther is going to be a science fiction. I think, yeah. I thought Thor Ragnarok was a science fiction.
Yes, so do I.
Out of all of them, I think that one, you know, has a lot of science fiction in it.
Yeah, and I think for the most part, I was one of those people that thought science fiction was just space.
Right.
And now that going through the podcast, now that I'm a little older, I can say, you know, that's kind of bullshit, because just because you're in space doesn't make it science fiction. Just you could Star Wars. I'm coming to the side where it's more fantasy than science fiction.
Yeah, it doesn't, like...
They tried to make it science fiction with the Midichlorians, right. But it's more fantasy.
But, you know, that's actually on my list somewhere else, but we see what that, how that...
Yeah, yeah, that went over real well.
Yeah, so...
But to go back to Kyle's point with the landing on the planet without your suit, it's kind of like going camping without a tent, or, like, going camping without bug spray.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things that you take precautions for... Even though you know that, like, you may have, like, I looked at the campsite before. I know that the campsite is safe. Yeah. There's no bears, you know. Our camp, there's no rocks on the ground. But, you know, you want to make sure that you plan for the inevitable, because that's what kind of happens.
You know, these are the same movie, and I have this, we'll transition right from that into something else. And it's one that... Richard Pearman, he aliens who want to steal the Earth's water.
I saw that one. That was a really good one.
Or, like, they go across the universe just to land on Earth and steal the resources, which is stupid. You can't steal Earth's resources. Like, there's nothing on Earth that makes it so special. And the counterpoint to that, like I've seen elsewhere on here, was, you know, these space allergies, like you land on Earth and then you're allergic to water, or you're allergic to the common cold. Like, wouldn't you know coming in what the problems are and say, well,
I'd hope so.
This is a thing that could wipe out my entire race, so I'm not going to land on that planet. And that's kind of the same thing. If you're going to, like, allow for that to happen, then you can't allow for, you know, humans can go anywhere.
Yeah.
And you and me both have allergies. I'm allergic to my house.
Yep, likewise.
You know, I'm probably allergic to myself in some way, like dust and everything else. So
you go to another quadrant. And
And
you go out there and you're like, oh, I'm allergic to just seeing
and then
things.
Every alien that lands on Earth is allergic to something on Earth, to the point where it could wipe out the entire species. But they didn't do any pre-planning. Like, I know if I go over your house, I have to take 2 Benadryl before I go over there.
And then wear a hazmat suit.
Yeah. So that's, it's the same thing, but it's like the flip side is everybody's allergic to Earth.
Yeah.
And every time they land on Earth, there is going to be something that kills them completely. Yeah. Like water. Like, you coming in, you didn't see the water.
Like, that's that blue stuff from space that you can see throughout the whole planet. I think to that point, if I were an alien, I would not want to. I would land on Earth and I'd be like, oh God, they've screwed this up. And I would just fly away. Like, could you just imagine, like, flying into, like, Libya? Like, with everything that's going on there, or, like, America now, and like, that's your leader?
Well, like, I was listening to, just leadership-wise, but, like, also I was listening to Neil deGrasse Tyson, who was saying, you know, people couldn't, I think he was talking to Joe Rogan, people couldn't wrap their head around, like, how they make predictions about whether a planet is a planet has civilization or not. And, you know, Neil deGrasse Tyson was just saying, well, based off the model that we know is working, which is ours, we don't look for people. You can't do that. We don't look for ships. We can't hear radio signals or any signals that they send out. But what we could hear or see is through, what's it called when, like, they check the chemistry of a planet through, like, the light spectrum. Whatever that is, they could see, like, you know, whether there is... you know, chlorofluorocarbons being produced, whether there's, you know, carbon dioxide being produced, you know, infrastructure creates pollution. And you see that, like, if there's a bloom of, like, noxious gas on someplace on the planet, then you're like, well, you know, that could be created by civilization, like Los Angeles, China, things like that. So,
yeah, I think people just want, they want greys and reptilians and Nordics.
And see, that's
and stuff
what
like that.
We could do. We could do that.
Yeah.
From with a telescope, like, billions of light years away. These aliens can't do it while they're flying towards us. So, you know, like, if we're already able to do it, these aliens, who can move faster than light, move through the universe, should already know. Like,
And it takes some time to get from point A to point B in space. And for you would think they would have, I think Star Trek and stuff like that, where they have the science officers saying, like, okay, this is what's going on. Like, they're planning it out. They're not like, oh, set a course for Earth and we'll see what happens. You know, you don't do that.
Right.
So there should be some more logistical stuff going into it. And speaking of logistics, it goes back to my next point, which was tech not being tested.
Yeah.
Like, you have this brand new tech, and they're like, all right, let's just take it right into the field.
Yeah.
And a couple people have said that, so I can't give credit to everybody because it was multiple people, but it was just like, you go out there, you have new weaponry, and you're going out there like, oh, it's never been tested. It'll work. Like, it's like driving a car that just came off the assembly line, and it's got three wheels.
Yeah.
Or like the first, I don't know, like solar power helicopter. Like, oh, right. It'll work. We'll get through it. So I just think that having tech, you would want to make sure it goes through trials and,
yeah,
you know, it's tested, but you see in everything, and you see it in Star Wars, you see it in the Orville and everything. It's all, nothing is tested.
It's just all plug and play.
Yeah.
Right. You, and like, it's invented that day.
Yeah.
Or like the time frame that it's invented is just in time for the next catastrophe that's coming.
Yeah.
Like, you know, in Armageddon, that was the one where Liv Tyler, right?
Yes.
Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
Like,
where they didn't want to close their eyes. They don't want to fall asleep.
But the planet's, you know, asteroids hurling.
Yeah.
But it just so happened they came up with this asteroid drilling technology that they could implement. Like, yeah, okay, great.
We've been working on asteroid drilling technology. Like, no, we cure cancer.
Yeah. Like,
don't worry about drilling asteroids. I think of, like, Professor Farnsworth in Futurama.
Yeah.
Where, like, something is just, like, happening, and he's like, well, I've just created this, and it may or may not work, and it attaches to your retina. And they're like, oh, hell yeah, put it on. And then they go blind for the next 3 weeks.
Right.
So it's just, there's always a fallout with this untested tech. So I thought that was really cool.
And it's funny that you bring up, like, that's, like, a great science fiction show.
Yeah.
It was funny, but a lot of the, like, that's, and the Orville does it in a way. Like, the Orville kind of, like, makes fun of the genre by being good at the genre, too. And Rick and Morty does it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so you have all these, like.
Oh, yeah, Rick makes, he has everything just like, oh, yeah, I knew this was going to, the world was going to be invaded by Teddy Grahams. So here's, like, a milk gun.
But, like, he knows, like, he doesn't tell, the like, what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, but they're always the ones that are, like, kind of the most truthful about science fiction and these stupid ideas and tropes. So
I thought that the tech not being tested was a really cool one. So thank you for everyone who said that in that group.
All right. So here's one. His name's Jung Cho.
Okay.
And he had a really good one. He his is pretty simple. Star Trek Discovery, or as everyone likes to call it, STD.
I saw that one. I saw that one as soon as he commented it.
Yeah. Well, what's good about that is, like, you've created a world where everything, like, your whole universe is delineated by anagrams or abbreviations.
Yep.
Like, you know, the original, the original series, TOS, or Voyager's VOW, or VOY, and
DS9, TNG. Yeah.
So
STD.
So you create one where people are going to automatically create an anagram for you, or an acronym, and it's going to, and you created STD.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people have problems with
Discovery.
Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah.
But that's one that, like, I didn't see, and I was like, why didn't I see it? Because I actually like using the little anagrams.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, that's really bad. That's really glaring. But
I couldn't get over the thought, like, the amount of disdain for Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah. And
I guess that's because, by nature, I'm not a Trekkie.
Right.
So, and this is something new and something that I didn't have to connect to everything
else.
It's
not, but the show is not very Trek-like.
Okay.
You know, like, it is, in a way, but, it, like, Star Trek's always been, like, hopeful and, you know, about the future. And, like, yeah, you see glimpses of how bad, you know, the fleet could be and leadership could be. But this is, like, kind of glaring.
Yeah, this one's pretty dark.
Yeah.
Like, even just from the tone, like, the lighting is dark. It's very, the colors are
and muted. I like seeing, I mean, I like, because I like that it is Star Trek and it's a little darker and grittier Star Trek, but, you know, like I said, I think Orville is a better example of Star Trek than Star Trek Discovery, but I still like Star Trek Discovery as a show.
You know what's funny? We went through this list, and I'm sure you did the same thing that I did. I went through every feed Like, I went through every comment to a comment to make sure I wasn't missing anything. I don't think I saw one comment about the Orville.
No.
Not one. And that was a show that people didn't think was going to make it, that it was going to be a spoof to the genre, and that it was going to kind of take a dump on everything that we knew.
Well, later on, like, when we get to our own personal ones, I had a few in there that, like, the Orville was kind of the show that stomps all over these bad tropes and, like, gets past all that and does different things. So, well, you know.
Now, I'm curious to see where season two goes with the Orville and if it continues that with the success that it has now, because, I mean, that was just, like, this is my passion project for McFarlane.
Right.
If season two goes even better, do you think that this could be like, all right, well, you know what, Star Trek Discovery, you're not Star Trek anymore.
We're just going to call it. It's definitely the Orville being as successful and coming out at the same exact time, being more successful. And it has been more successful.
And being available for free.
Right. As opposed to cut into a lot of that. Like, I think that the worst thing Discovery did was put it on a pay service.
I agree. And that's CBS just wanting more money.
That's CBS. And CBS makes a lot of bad decisions. Yeah. CBS has bad ideas. And I think that was one of them.
Yep.
If you could, like there's a YouTube site called Alpha. And it has a bunch of, it has like Geek and Sundry on it. It's like a pretty good competitor to like the Nerdist.
I think it's the same. Yeah, it is from Nerdist.
Yeah, it's like the Nerdist.
Project Alpha.
Yeah, it's like the Nerdist YouTube video. And they have Tabletop, a show I like. But what they do is, like, they do have specific content just for that.
Yeah.
But they, like, their bigger stuff that people really like watching, like Tabletop's a show I watch on there. It's a board game show with Will Wheaton.
Critical Role's on there as well. Yeah.
But they do it, the way they do it is, a lot of their bigger stuff is released just early, like months earlier than you would get it for free.
Yep.
Which is, okay, well, now you're saying you could watch it in 6 months or you could watch it now.
Yeah.
And I like that better than what they did with Star Trek Discovery.
I agree. And that's like Project Alpha has like the Matt Myra show, Sidekick. That's their, I think that's one of their flagship shows where you have to pay to get that.
Right.
But I get it. The it's $5.99, which isn't going to break the bank, but for one show.
That's like you really, for me, that's all it is.
You mean to tell me you're not going to go back and watch season one of Survivor? or Bull? Like, they're not the shows that you want to go back and watch? That's the sell. Like, oh, we're going to do, we want all the Trekkies to watch this show. Oh, by the way, here's a show from Will Ferrell. Like, it's not the same.
Well, I think what they're doing is that's like, at least for CW, and their streaming service, they shrank their selection down kind of into, we're just a comic book or primarily DC comic book network.
Yep.
Know what you're good at and stick to it. And that's what they did. Like, CBS can't do that because they have a whole slew of shows. So.
And it's proved that they couldn't do especially that genre because they started with Supergirl and they said, oh, we can't do this. And they gave Supergirl over to CW.
Right.
So you got to know what you're good at. And if you're going to go into the sci-fi realm, make sure that you backlog the CBS All Access with other Star Trek shows. Like,
yeah, you have, I thought they had, and I thought they had the rights to TNG at least. I might be wrong about that.
I think we talked about that. I think that was UPN.
Which
would go over to the CW.
Yeah.
But now all the Star Trek backlogs are on Netflix
for free. Well, for Netflix price.
But then you get, for the $11.99, if you have my plan, you get all the movies. You could use it on your phone. Like, you're not just saying, oh, after Star Trek Discovery is over, I can go and watch Young Sheldon or I can watch the Anna Faris show. Like, these aren't the shows that the traditional Trekkies are gonna go see,
right?
So I get the disdain for it. It's new to me, so I like it. So
I like it, but I mean, it is an obvious cash grab.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And we've talked about that on our Star Trek Discovery. Yeah. So we have our feelings. My next one was English being a universal language.
Yeah.
And the official language of space for.
Yeah. That was one of mine too. That was a big one.
And that came from a guy named Roland Jones.
Yeah.
First of all, that's a great name. Like that's a Dark Tower name, Roland Jones.
Yeah.
So I applaud you on a great name. English is not the universal language of Earth, but it's the official language of every other planet.
Right.
And the only show that I've really seen that has really taken that trope and said, all right, we're going to fix it, or movie, was Valerian.
Right, yeah.
Where they walked in, it was like that Fifth Element kind of meet and greet. Everybody spoke a different language, but it was translated. Right?
It was translated.
And I think the Orville does it, too.
Yeah.
Where it was...
They say it was translated. And, like, Star Trek, it's kind of wonky because they say, like, the ship takes over and the Universal Translator takes over. But, like, sometimes, like, that falls apart when they don't have the technology and they're still hearing English. Like, you know, when sometimes it's supposed to come through the comm badge.
So it's like Bluetooth?
Yeah, but they don't have the comm badge. Yeah. They're still hearing English. Well, that now that your premise is broken. So.
Yeah, I can tell you the Ferengi don't speak English as their home language. Like, they don't look like English-speaking people. So I feel like that's just simplification. They're like, oh, we don't want to explain the fact that they speak this language, and space is kind of like a melting pot of everything.
To piggyback off what you just said, just to let you know, Marvin Price also wrote that same exact thing. He said, English-speaking humanoid aliens. So.
Wow. All right. Man,
he hit a lot of the good points.
God, he was on point with this episode. So him and Roland get that shout-out. But, you know, English isn't the global language of Earth.
Right.
So it shouldn't be the language of space. That's where I was with that one. What do you got?
Well, okay, this is the last one, right?
Oh, no, that was my third.
Oh, was it?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
This will be your fourth.
Yeah, okay. So to piggyback off of that, bipedal humanoid aliens is kind of like a big thing that came up everywhere. Like, in all inclusive like universe, like, you know, Star Wars, Star Trek, you know, any of them, you know, Battlestar Galactica, Stargate Atlantis, all these other ones.
Yeah.
They build ships exclusively for 6 foot tall bipedal humanoids.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, you know, Orville, like we said, you know, what's his name? Yaffet.
But,
you know, they don't get bigger, but it kind of, like, touches on that a little bit. But you don't see, like, insectoids on there.
Yeah.
You don't see big, giant, 20-foot tall.
It needs to be like what Zootopia was.
Yeah.
Where, like, I'm so glad I was able to use my Zootopia reference. Where you saw, like, Judy was going to the Animal Kingdom City.
Yeah.
And, like, the train had sizes for mice, for sheep, for giraffes, for hippos, and, you know, it wasn't just universal.
All, like, in this idea, they would all have to live together.
Yeah.
And what other show does that?
Monsters, Inc.
I'm
big on Disney today.
But Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Yeah. A lot of their, like, aliens are just huge, like, grotesque monsters. So,
yeah.
Like, he did it really well. But he did a lot of stuff really good. Yeah. Like, the Babel Fish and all that.
Is it more of, again, a cheap way out to saying, like,
it's gotta
this
be.
Is what it is?
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Well, it's human-centric, like, and a thing that came up a lot of places is the idea that, like, all aliens would be humanoid.
Yeah.
Like, no matter where you go, there's some type of humanoid alien.
Like, three-quarters of the Star Wars universe?
Right.
Like, Luke Skywalker is technically an alien.
Yeah.
And he is just Mark Hamill. You know what I mean? So it's one of those things, and I get the reasons for taking the shortcuts, because most of the sci-fi that we've reviewed and that we're fans of takes place in a time where the digital remastery and all the effects weren't able to be utilized properly. Like, budgets were lower, technology wasn't established. So we get the cheap way out. You know, it goes back to what we talked about in all of our Doctor Who episodes. We can just blame it on the TARDIS.
Yeah.
Because you can't afford to. And Doctor Who does a really good non-human... Well, I guess they're humanoid aliens in the sense of, like, the Silence is a 6 foot tall guy that looks like Doug Jones with a mask on.
Well, yeah, they humanize everything. Yeah. Even if it's, like...
Even the Dalek.
Yeah.
There's a human person in there.
It eventually has to be humanized to... I guess that's to relate, but... I mean, if we're watching this, we've already had to, like, jump over so many plot holes and, yeah. you know, problems. Like, and we're giving you so much credit, you know, you could give us some, like, it wouldn't be that much of a leap to give us, but, you know.
Do you think we'll ever see a sci-fi show or movie where it is flawless?
No.
Like, they get to the point, like, they travel through space, there is a universal translator, but we see it in action. And if they don't have it, they have to deal. There's like a whole episode. Like if they go to another planet and the universal translator is broken, they have to deal with it, and they have to use body cues and language like that.
Well, yeah, they you know, Star Trek hit on a couple of those things. Like for all its kind of flawed things, there was a lot of stuff that they tried to like. And in Enterprise, the you know, which was about the original crew, they did the like they had. They had somebody on there programming the unit. They didn't have a universal translator. Yeah. They were just inventing it, and their translator was a woman who was programming it. So that broke down. The ship was powerless, and she had to, like, kind of, you know, piece apart a whole entire language by herself as they were talking to her, you know, guns ablaze and stuff like that. But that kind of was the same thing. They did that. I mean, that was in a, you know, it happens. In you know, one little piece of it happens. But as a whole show, I think it's going to be hard because sci-fi has to stay ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
So the more the advanced we get, the more we'll find wrong with something. And then, like, it just... whatever comes and we think is perfect... Like, we thought Star Trek was about as good as you can get for a long time. Then, like, science kind of picked it apart. And it had some great ideas, but itself, like, by itself as a whole, it's not, you know, it's...
Yeah.
Got the same flaws, same amount of flaws everything else does.
So. And this is a genre that is completely always going to be under a microscope because, again, it goes back to what you said, it has to stay a step ahead. And this whole genre is based on predicting the future or using your imagination to predict what's out there. You know what I mean? We may never be able to go on a Prometheus-like journey where we get out and there's xenomorphs and stuff like that. Or we'll never have flying cars. You know what I mean? The early sci-fi said if we would have flying cars. Even Blade Runner 2049, or Blade Runner the first one, was set in 2019.
Yeah.
And you have, it was supposed to look like that. We don't look like that. I mean, maybe Tokyo looks like that.
Right.
But we don't look like that. So it's always trying to predict things, and people are always going to be like, oh, well, that's not how it was supposed to be. It can't be like The Simpsons, where they seem to be getting everything right. And I think the only way you get a perfect sci-fi show is A, either an animation, because you have more abilities there, or B,
and to go to talk about, you know, animation is where you could pull off a spaceship that could hold, that has a crew complement of 40 foot tall werewolf monsters and atomic size, because you can't pull that off in the real world. I get why that's done, but yeah, animation's where it always, like, you can always get that right now.
Yeah, like with Futurama.
Yeah.
It gives you what you want in the small and big doses. But the only other way I think you can do it is if you get specific sci-fi fans. Like, they live and breed sci-fi, and they stay in the show. They showrun it, they direct it, they do all of it.
Yeah.
That way. But that's plausible. That's not...
We're seeing a lot of, you know, a lot of fans taking over. Yeah. Like, J.J. Abrams is a fan.
Yeah.
Seth MacFarlane was a huge fan of Star Trek. And
even Duncan Jones, he's not a sci-fi fan, but he's a big... Well, I guess he could be a sci-fi fan, but he's a big World of Warcraft fan, and he did the Warcraft movie, and I enjoyed it. Not a lot of people else did.
It was fun to watch. I liked it enough. And exactly. Like, fans, you know, movies used to be made by executives, and you find a director...
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, the writer's passion, and we'll see a ton of movies, like classics that we'd all, you know, like Roald Dahl says that, you know, his vision was never on the movie. And like, he wrote one of the, you know, most famous movies of all time and things like that. Like, you can't, writers rarely are able to get their stuff out there. Now that the directors are fans, the writers are fans, the executives have gotten a position to be, and whether it's fantasy, sci-fi, horror, you know, everybody that's involved is a fan of it. So there's a better chance of it happening now than there used to be, than an executive coming in and say, this is all a bunch of nonsense, I don't understand, and throwing it out the window.
And so, for as much as we talked about how we didn't like the acting in Valerian, Luc Besson is really good at sci-fi.
Yeah, and that's why I was disappointed.
Yeah, and he utilized everything that we wanted as far as, it's not this humanoid world. We saw so many different aliens. We saw so many different types of people. and he captured that. But the problem is, we lost it on the script. And that's another movie that really didn't get a lot of hate in the thread.
I know. It's weird because...
Now, it could be they loved it or they didn't see it.
Well, here's the thing about, to rant on Valerian, which we did for a whole episode.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Yep. And it is... I think it's a great idea, and its source material is kind of like, it's a national treasure a little bit. So, it just, you got two people, and Luc Besson's involved, and everybody likes Luc Besson. You got two people that shouldn't be acting.
Yeah.
Definitely shouldn't be acting together, because you made each other worse. And it's just that you could, they were the problem.
Yeah.
Titular characters were the problem.
And they were probably the studio saying, we have these two people, they're hot, put them in there. You know, unless you could have just spent a little more money to get more talented.
And that's the thing is, like, you know, Luc Besson has done a lot with nobodies. Yeah. Like,
Mila Jovovich wasn't anybody before The Fifth Element.
And she was just a pretty model
before
The Fifth Element. And
she's become a face that people recognize. They might not know how to pronounce her name, but they were able to recognize. And I don't think Chris Tucker, he broke out with Friday.
Right.
But, what was Gary Oldman
all
doing?
All his Jackie Chan movies came after this.
Yeah.
So, and that was a crazy idea that nobody understood, but he pulled it off.
And I love The Fifth Element. I still watch that movie. It's one of my favorites.
So, I don't know. Maybe Valerian will work somewhere.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll pop.
On mute. It works on mute. That's really all. The story is beautiful. The transitions through the characters and everything like that is beautiful. But
I don't know because, like, what's her name? Cara Delevingne or...
Yeah, Devlin.
Devlin. It's Devlin is makes it very easy because it's got 30 letters in it. But she just looks so bored.
Yep.
And I know, and maybe that's just her... standard face, her model face, is, you know, look bored.
Well, she looked bored in Suicide Squad too.
Yeah.
So I think
both of them were, and to this comic book, and I was going to tell you this, but I was away over in Harrisburg, and I went to like this famous bookstore, and they had a whole pile of the volumes, volumes 1 through 10
That's
in
awesome.
English. I was like flipping through. I was like, maybe I should pick a couple up, but I didn't. And they were cool looking.
Yeah.
They were like,
I've scanned the pages at Barnes & Noble.
They were cool, like old book, like old sci-fi books were, like comics were. They you know, like Tales of the Amazing or the Astonishing, things like that. So, you know, they messed up.
Maybe we can talk about that in the group as well. See the general feelings of Valerian.
But
my fourth one is from a guy named Michael. And it's canceling Firefly.
Yeah, that's.
That's a terrible idea.
Yeah,
and we're at a point where.
And not, I think that's goes right along with what we were just saying. Is like that's executives not seeing.
Yep.
What they have, you know, the forest through the trees, as they say.
Was it too early for Firefly?
Definitely.
Because I think
Firefly would be huge right now.
We're at a point where Firefly is, or not Firefly, science fiction is at the peak. The main pillars are back. Star Wars, Star Trek, they're back. New stuff's working with the Killjoys and what's it, the Expanse and the Orville. I would just say that Firefly
and here's
would
what's crazy about Firefly is Firefly would be huge right now. Firefly would be huge, and J.J. Abrams is a big deal right now. But Firefly would be huge with the same exact cast right now.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And
they don't even need to like change anything about the. The writing, it would be even more believable
because
they're older now. They don't even look that much older. Yeah. None of them do, really.
And you bring Josh Whedon back, and you're good to go.
So, I think it... I mean, they've all moved on, and fortunately, they've all had pretty successful careers.
But they all want to do it.
Yeah.
They all want to be back with Firefly. And I think the only one you really can't get is Alan Tudyk. Because he met his unfortunate demise.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think he's taken off the most with Disney and all that. He's doing everything. The only thing he hasn't done yet is Marvel.
Right.
So, I don't know. I would love to see Firefly come back. And I think that was a big mistake in the world of sci-fi.
That's perfect for a transition from what we were just talking about. Is just somebody didn't see...
Yep.
And you know, everybody says, oh, there's great one series out there. But I think that's the biggest, like... canceled too early, the Firefly cancellation. And,
yeah.
And it had such a big story coming in. Everybody liked, I don't know if everybody liked it. I think they did, though.
I think everybody liked it, but the executives, again, didn't like it. And they said, you know, this doesn't fit on Fox.
Yeah.
And then we didn't have Netflix. We didn't have Hulu back then or Amazon where they could be like, oh, we'll just buy it. Because I think if it was on the table, people would have bought it. But you get to a point where, you know, there are great one series shows, but then they'll always have the caveat to it that, oh, you were a one series show because you couldn't make it into a multiple season arc. And that's what frustrates me about Firefly, because it could have. I mean, it got a movie out of it.
Yeah, but
that was a Band-Aid on a bullet hole.
Yeah.
So I don't know. What's your fifth?
Okay, my fifth will be, we talked about him, Patrick Murphy.
And isn't that our governor?
No, Patrick Murphy was a congressman from Philadelphia.
But Phil Murphy is our governor now.
Yeah, Phil Murphy is our governor. All right, but Patrick Murphy was a congressman.
Jesus, that's a very... Go into politics, Patrick. You have the name for it.
Patrick Murphy was the second guy to comment, and he made sure he's like, I'm only going to do it once, so here's everything. And I think 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different things, paragraphs long.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean...
I've seen this one. He was...
Adding outright magic, just slipping magic into anything. Psychic powers.
Well, every space adventure needs a wizard.
Yeah, clubbing the audience over to hit, And that's that exposition. Like, let me make sure you understand what we're talking about. Because we're getting deep, I want to... gratuitous out in anything. So, gratuitous space battle. A lot of Star Wars space battles are gratuitous. Yeah. There's just thousands of ships being thrown at each other.
Like the beginning of The Last Jedi?
Yeah. Space Nazis, but just more about what Nazis are like. Okay, the one I picked is Deus Ex Machina. He puts, especially when it's just applied technobabble, so, just the random, just vomiting words out that have a techno sound to it that mean nothing.
Oh, what was the show? Was it the Deep Space Nine? No, it was the Babylon 5 episode we did.
Yeah.
Where he was like a forensic philanthropist and archaeologist, and he was just, oh, that was so bad.
Yeah, it's, we say, Deus Ex Machina, it means... one thing that fixes the problem, but doesn't explain how it fixes. And that's we always say, just blame the TARDIS, and that's basically what the TARDIS is there for. Is a literal Deus Ex Machina, and that's what this is filling any gap that you can't figure out with just a bunch of words instead of actually researching, maybe coming up or changing the idea instead of changing the words, and that's a big one for me. And Star Trek does it sometimes. They just throw a bunch of words together, but they've always had science advisors, but still, you gotta let one slip through here and there. So Patrick Murphy had a ton of them. Look at his comments. He could have did his own podcast on the amount of comments he put there,
and he's probably doing one, and if he isn't, he should, because he brought some really great points. That I agree with everything that he said on there. And it kind of goes, he might have ushered in the fact of my fifth one, where it was the general disdain for Star Wars.
Yeah.
And I love Star Wars. I've always loved Star Wars. But I got things from Midichlorians to Jar Jar Binks. So the prequels were obviously
heavy the prequels. Fogel. And, okay, you go on and then we'll transition into... We each have top five.
Yeah.
That we'll go back and forth with of our own.
So we go to the prequels. Then we go to something that we talked about with the humanoid aliens that... You just assume that every alien looks like a human. And then it went to, Finn and Rose. It was like, and then it's like, get rid of Finn. And then the same guy commented, right after his comment, was like, oh, yeah, and Rose, too. She sucks.
Yeah.
And I was just like, geez, I never thought that there was going to be so much hate for Star Wars amongst the sci-fi community. And then it goes back to looking at it like, all right, this is fantasy.
Right.
It's not like the attempt that they did to make it science fiction is the number one thing on there. And I think we saw midichlorians the
most. A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was everywhere. And so many different spellings of it. It was...
I have midichlorians. I don't know. I'm not sure how it's spelled.
But we both spelled it wrong. Or different. Because you have the M-I-D-I. I have M-I-T-O. So I think that the general disdain for Star Wars was a bad idea. Because there, I think we're just looking into it from a different type of...
Okay, do you think it would have gotten as far if they marketed it as, you know, space fantasy, space opera, space... Did it need to be marketed as sci-fi to make money?
Yes. I think so, because it was supposed to be a space western.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Initially, George Lucas wanted it to be a western. And I get the western trope throughout the whole thing. You got Luke, who's like the Sundance Kid, and he's going from city to city, but yeah, in this world,
he's riding off into the sunset almost literally some places. And
And there's a bandit out there that he's got to vanquish, and that's Darth and everybody else. So I get it, because if it was looked at a space opera, I don't think it would have made it out of one movie.
And which is, you know,
could you imagine this movie where they're singing? Oh, Christ.
But like I really don't think it's science fiction. Mm-hmm. But I like Star Wars, and I'm glad it's there. So whatever got it to where it is okay. I mean, they had the mark. Because I don't think it would have made it as far either. Because fantasy doesn't sell.
Mm-mm.
So no matter what, sci-fi sells better than fantasy, and always will.
The only fantasy that has sold was Lord of the Rings.
Right, well, now and Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Would you consider Harry Potter fantasy?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess it had, but...
In the 2000s on, it
2000s it works, but that's because of... It's because of special effects, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Do you remember the Hobbit story from like a long, long time ago?
But I mean, like, you know, the puppetry works for so long, but then like,
Dark Crystal was a fantasy movie, but
that was like, you know, the exceptions to the rule are because of the story. Dark Crystal had an amazing story, and Labyrinth had an awesome story, and Dave Bowie
and great people behind it too, with Jim Henson and everybody like that. So if it were, I don't know, something that rivaled the Labyrinth, like, all right, so this is gonna go downhill. One of my favorite movies is The Neverending Story.
Right,
that's a fantasy movie. It's trash when it doesn't hold up. I still love it. Like, it was my childhood, so I always loved the first one. The second and the third one, and a lot of people don't even know there's a third one, are awful.
Yeah.
Where John Wesley...
The third one's got Jack Black, right?
He's the bad guy. And John Wesley Shipp's in the second one, and the kid, Bastion, changes, and the dad changes in every movie, and it's just... It's bad. But that would kind of be the rival to, like, Labyrinth and stuff, where people will say Labyrinth is the best, like, 80s fantasy. And then they'll forget about the never-ending story.
You got to think about standard definition television in just, let's go back in 1990s, gave you a lot to do with fantasy and sci-fi. Like, you can get away with a lot more back then. So that's why I think a lot of fantasy shows, and thing is like, if you put some, fantasy is kind of generally put in a medieval landscape. If you put it in a medieval landscape, but you don't show the brutalities that we knew happened in the medieval times, like, you know...
Yeah, not everything's Disney's version.
And I think that's why Game of Thrones works so well, is you're like, we know that huge wars with swords and arrows happened, and then rape was huge, and degradation was
incest.
Huge. And disease was gigantic, so... Those are realities of the medieval times, and fantasy should cover that.
Yeah. Like,
I think that's why it's working now, because not that it's realistic, but it's closer to reality.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you take the dragons and the White Walkers away from Game of Thrones, I think it's more realistic than what Disney put out with the Sorcerer's Stone.
Right.
Or what Lord of the Rings is, because Lord of the Rings is fantasy, but you just know, there's orcs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's one of those things that, like, they're only battling mythological creatures.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That was my top five. That was your top five from the science fiction group. So if you're not a follower of that group and you love science fiction, go to Facebook, join it, fill out their questionnaire in the beginning.
Yeah, they have a lot of good. I've put a couple really good. I've started a couple threads on there and had really good conversations. Like, and something we're going to have to eventually cover is Red Dwarf, hard sci-fi. Red Dwarf is one of my all-time favorite shows.
That was on our wheel. Yeah. We're going to go back to the wheel one day.
Yeah, I think that we have. There's a lot of stuff we still like. Red Dwarf, I think we should cover.
We haven't done any Battlestar.
Battlestar Galactica, yeah. Both iterations. Yep. If I
could talk Momoa in space, I'll do it. All right, so from that, we'll move into our own top five, because we are already 51 minutes into our episode, which is fantastic, because I was a little worried that this wasn't going to generate some topics. So let's hear your number one.
Okay.
I want to see if we have any similar.
I'm going to start with one I know we don't share. And a couple of my topics have been touched on: bipedal humans, midichlorians was my number one. It was right there.
I see it.
I'll just touch on it briefly, is how crazy is it that one thing almost toppled what is now like a $5 billion juggernaut, but it really almost brought it to its knees. Like,
between that and Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah.
That could have...
And Jar Jar Binks didn't come up as much as midichlorians, oddly enough. But I'll start with humans as batteries.
Okay.
That,
you know what? That's huge in the DC Metal comics right now.
Yeah. Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Whatever, like emotions or
This is actual Superman is a battery for the Dark Universe. Like the heroes, Teen Titans, the Suicide Squad, they're all chained up. It's really cool. So I'm glad.
I'll have to look at that.
Yeah, I'm totally geeking out.
But like Matrix.
Yeah.
You know, even though it would cost so much energy to use humans, wouldn't you just create solar powered batteries? Yep. Why would you? It's so much. Matrix is actually really bad in like sci-fi, but it's covered in cool visuals and cool action and cool. So
it was before its time.
Yeah. But it is, when you break it, like the science of the Matrix is kind of stupid.
Kind of like what they do in Ghost in the Shell too.
Yeah.
Where they're all kind of sucked into this system. I don't know a lot about Ghost in the Shell other than the Scarlett Johansson movie, so that was maybe that was a bad reference.
But that is what it is. Like cyborgs are kind of commonplace and stuff like that. But in Matrix, they keep a pacified human race in these pods, for anybody who hasn't seen the Matrix 25 years ago, whatever it was, and the electrical charge that humans produce is enough to run a civilization that these, robots create, which is crazy because we barely, and if you watch, a ton of energy gets pushed into these humans. Like, they have to create this whole entire world for them to be happy. They have, lights and machinery attached to them. Every human has a machine attached to them, has a robot that has to tend to them, has to live inside this thing, so... What is a human generate? And I know the science is out there. You probably go look at it. Like, what are we generating wattage-wise? Like,
not a lot.
Right. And then what is the requirement just to have us housed in this pod, in this gel and this goo, and live in this fantasy world?
And so, just to harness kinetic energy.
Yeah.
Because, I saw... This is a weird segue, but I saw a guy on Shark Tank that was trying to sell this.
Kinetic band?
Yeah. Where it would, it would charge your phone.
Yeah.
Like a... 12-hour workday would, I don't know, but it's my workday. It's your workday too, 12-hour workdays, would charge your phone for 40 minutes. You know what I mean? That's 12 hours of constant motion.
Right.
Would give you 40 minutes. So, imagine, to your point, we're not lighting a house for an entire night, or we're not lighting a city with two people. Me and you, we probably couldn't run our computers for this hour based on our kinetic energy.
But they create this enormous infrastructure with flying machines that put out ion energy, all this kind of and we never understand why that they are doing it, what they need from the human, but that's the bad, that's literal energy. But any, like you were saying, is like even if it's like sometimes humans are used as like emotion batteries and stuff like that, and it's all kind of silly. Yeah. But humans as batteries for anything, but Matrix is mainly what we could narrow that down to.
My first one was sound in space.
Yeah, now I have to cross one off of mine. Yeah.
Well, now we can talk about it. It's lazy.
Yeah.
It's lazy. There's absolutely no sound
in space. Sound / explosions.
Yeah. You see it in every movie. Every TV show, there's always... I think that's just for...
One of the best parts about the Last Jedi, I know, God forbid, we probably just alienated everybody. Yeah. There is a good part in The Last Jedi.
Oh, spoiler alerts going forward.
Yeah. Well, for that, but when there is no sound, after the crash, there's no explosion, no sound. That's kind of the best part of the movie.
Yeah.
It takes you out of it. You're like, oh, wow, because a lot was going on, and nothing. And it's fun to watch,
In The Force Awakens, there's all this explosions.
Yeah.
In every other sci-fi, every good sci-fi show, every bad sci-fi show, there's always sound. Everything.
Yeah.
And
I think it got to a point where they're just like, screw it.
Yeah.
I don't care about your stupid rules, physics, and science.
Right? It's just like, we just want to make this... We have explosions. Yeah. We have fireworks. We want to use it. Another one that didn't make my list was when you're on a ship with somebody and something goes wrong, and I'm thinking alien... And you immediately start flamethrowing it on a ship and shooting.
Yeah.
Like, why would you shoot a gun on a spaceship? It's like shooting a gun on an airplane. You hit a window, you're done.
Yeah.
Even more in space, you're done. Right. So it blows my mind that those decisions are made. But we'll go with more decisions on space. But what's your second?
That was taken up. So after the inevitable, the inevitable apocalypse of any kind happens, and some apocalypse is going to happen, and dystopian should be on here, but something happens, and a game takes over the planet, sort of like Hunger Games or
the Maze Runner,
the
last Active Geek podcast episode,
or like Thunderdome, in a smaller case, or like you can go Murderball. Murderball was about the guys in wheelchairs, right? Mm-hmm. But
that's a whole different type of game.
But no, like
a Divergent.
Or it goes on and on and on and on, or Running Man.
Yeah.
So something happens, and somehow a game show takes over and runs the political and like the infrastructure of the planet.
What was that movie where Terry Crews was the president? Idiocracy?
Yeah.
There was a game there. It was like, monster trucks?
Yeah. So, every, like, dystopian or bad future or apocalypse, eventually, and I get it, humans kind of love and crave games. And, as far back as we could tell, that humans have always played games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we find... pictures of them playing game, what are they called? Cave paintings and stuff like that.
Hieroglyphics and stuff.
I get that. We'll always do it. Gladiator arenas were huge and would be huge now. Football basically is UFC. UFC. Bellator. We were just talking about it 10 minutes ago. But it's just like to get to a point where, the entire, world or, the entire...
There's a game master to it
all. Controls, has that much power. And I get Hunger Games is kind of a different thing, but it's still the game.
No, but they it's the same thing, though, because in a world that's already destroyed, these people have tried to rebuild it where one center hub of it is immaculate. And it's kind of utopian, and Utopias had a lot of conversation on that list as well. But one part of it has electricity, everybody's dressed and cleaned and safe, and then people come in and there's like the poor people, and now they're going to be the
pawns. Play a game to get to this point.
Yeah,
Where
does all the money come from? Where does all
Ready
the
Ready Player One's like that? Yeah. The whole entire thing is.
And now if you, to the Maze Runner's point, I'm fresh off of a lot of Maze Runner. The first movie takes place in the jungle. Second movie takes place across like a desert. The third movie is in a city. You went from everything was demolished and apocalyptic to New York City.
Yeah.
And it blows my mind that's the way of thinking. That we're just going to make one center capital And if you can afford it, you can go there.
Okay.
And if you can't, you're going to be part of the game, and you're going to be our enjoyment.
Yeah, it could be done well, like everything on our list. It's just it's like an inevitability.
Yeah.
It's all going to eventually there's going to be a Walking Dead game.
Well, that's why I'm pulling for the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah. No games.
If any other apocalypse, I want it to be a zombie apocalypse. Minus the World War Z type zombies, because I am not a fast man, and by the time the apocalypse happens, my wife will certainly not be a fast woman. So I would like to carry on the new world with a wife that I've kept, not that I've had to find. So that's a great one. My next one was the Fantastic Four movie of 2015.
Yeah, that was a bad idea.
Just in general, it was a terrible idea. You have so much source material to a huge franchise that could have rivaled what Marvel was doing, and they turned it into a very good sci-fi movie, just with the characters that I knew weren't 100%
right.
Built in that world. So that was my second one. I don't need to dwell on it. If you saw it, you know it's a bad one.
It's a bad sci-fi.
I picked a lot of bad movies. My third one is a bad movie as well.
That one. Okay, this one's kind of very specific to a TV show.
Okay.
It's Stargate Atlantis specific, but okay, one of the main enemies, it is probably the biggest enemy there, are called the Wraith. They suck the life force out of you, which is probably dumb too, but so they have, they're tall, pale skin. The guy that played
so look like me.
Yeah. But the guy that played Beast from Beauty and the Beast back in the day.
Ron Perlman?
Yeah. Oh no. Yeah, that was Ron Perlman, wasn't it? I'm thinking of somebody else. He played a bunch of, he's tall, gangly. But anyway, but these aliens are, pasty skin, long white hair.
Is it Doug Jones?
No, it's not Doug Jones.
Okay.
Because he was probably doing something Star Trek. Yeah. But, so, they have these big, giant, sharp teeth, and, but the way they suck the life forces out with their hands. So, why do you have these giant, sharp teeth? They show what they evolved from. They evolved from little face huggers.
Yeah.
They literally jump on a guy's face.
Okay.
They're like, all right, well, the shark teeth probably latched on like a lamprey. But they suck. So the teeth would, they would jump on your face, clamp on, and then the same mouth would suck the life force out. So how did the mouth, the sucking apparatus, through evolution...
Go to hands.
Move to the guy's hand? With that much evolution... why you would get rid of your teeth, get rid of so much stuff. That's a lot of evolution, a lot of things that happen for them to still have teeth and the sucking apparatus to move to your arms. It doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't at all.
And they're good characters, and I like the show a lot.
And the name's really great. Wraith. What show was it?
It's a Stargate Atlantis.
Okay. I knew I
sounded familiar. They live in these giant hive ships. Everything about it is actually pretty good. But that's a crazy thing to me. Is they evolved that way, which is fine because they did evolve that way. But the sucking apparatus was in their mouth, and then it migrated to their hands.
Yeah, at one point it would have to go to the shoulder.
Right.
I want to see the shoulder sucking. Right. I want to see how that works because that.
But that, that would it would make more sense to migrate to their
at their chest.
Yeah, they bite on and the hand, push they them hug down. Them in or something. Yeah, it's silly.
Yeah, bite the face, bring the body around as a hug. The chest sucks the life force.
Well, that's what heart. They had. They had the face huggers, and they had the legs would wrap, and it was a face hugger, and this towel would wrap around and start strangling you. And the more you moved, the towel would get tighter. So
so they just created a new person that could just hold.
Well,
that's so weird.
It was retroactive because they create the Wraith, then they I don't know how their timeline was in their office, but that's how it is in a show. It looks like it was retroactive. They invented these face huggers.
Yeah, that's a bad idea too. I like it. I like it though. My next one is the Jupiter Ascending movie.
Yeah, I was going to throw that on here. I was like,
trash. 100%.
I couldn't throw it on here because I'd never seen it.
It's Cinderella.
The whole thing.
It's Cinderella in space.
Yeah.
You want to talk space operas? It was that meant to be a trilogy. Everything put into one movie. Channing Tatum was your lead space dog, gangster skateboarder. I don't know, rollerblader. It was trash. So that's number three.
A huge one. Okay, so that was three, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you're only gonna bring? Oh, you have 10. You have 30.
No, I had 10, but we actually five of them we used. So four movie trilogies.
Okay.
splitting off the last movie drives me nuts.
Yeah.
I think it, The Hobbit in general is as a trilogy makes, and that's just, it's one 200-page book they turned into a trilogy. Yeah. But four movie trilogies, I hate it. I hate it. And it's all across everything. Like, it's fantasy, it's science fiction, but...
Hunger Games did it.
Yeah. So...
Yeah, I think that's bad, too. Well, even like Harry Potter did it, too, with their last book, splitting them into two. Yeah. Just cut away from some of the forced dialogue to make sure all these actors get their screen time and just get to the story.
Right.
Get to the juicy parts. I don't want to set up love interest for Neville if I'm never going to see him again.
And I love, like, Harry Potter. It's for me, this sprung out of the idea of, like, like a lot of the books I read are like, okay, well, we start with a 250-page book that sells huge.
Yeah.
And that goes on for a while. And then the last, like, three books jump up to 800 pages.
Yeah.
You want to tell everybody you're so smart. Like,
yeah.
Stick with what will work. Yeah. Now I got to double the amount of reading I have to do to finish your series. Like,
it's a cash grab.
Yeah, I think
especially
it is in a way.
Especially in the movies, because you want to prolong the storyline as much as you want. Another thing that kind of gets me frustrated is prequels to franchises that we don't need.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't need a Leatherface origin story. You know, we've seen that in the first Texas Chainsaw.
It settles no part of the story.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't. Well, horror is a good one to talk about prequels, because not knowing where this person comes from, I think, is fun.
Yeah.
Like, it's a good part. Like, the mystery is part of the story. Like, how the hell did this guy get created?
Yeah. And that's why the new Nightmare didn't work for me when they showed how Freddy became Freddy.
Right.
Like, where he's being teased and they light him on fire. And, like, that didn't work for me. And, like, I've watched all the Texas Chainsaw origin stories, and I want my money back. My fourth one is not a movie, but kind of coordinates with the movie, is sending these super strong androids into space with a crew of people when they can be so easily compromised.
Yeah.
It's like a flick of a switch, and they're kill machines.
All androids have a switch.
Yeah. So, and
easily switched.
Ridley Scott is another one that did that with, like, with Michael Fassbender's character.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And he just goes out there and just starts killing
everybody. I was thinking of Data, and he's got a literal shut off switch.
Yeah.
And, like, every season he gets taken over by something.
And they're so strong.
Yeah,
like even the Orville, the character on the Orville, Isaac, he's the strongest person on that ship.
Yeah,
and he could just snap you in half, and he's smart enough that he could pilot the ship to anywhere else.
I get the point that, well, Isaac is his own race, so it doesn't make sense for him to have a switch.
Yeah,
but like Data, the program a kill switch and only let a certain few people know is a good idea, because then you're like, well, you know, we might have to shut him down.
Yeah,
but yeah, like.
It's just a red switch that's, like, lit up on his back. Like, pull me if you want me to be bad. It's kind of like the Mirrorverse where everybody has beards.
Yeah.
That's another bad idea. All right, what's your do you have a fifth one, final one?
Yeah, the fifth and final one, which is kind of controversial to us. It's because we've done 37, and that makes sense because we've done 37 episodes, but we've only done 26 in reality. But it's a Doctor Who related thing.
Yes.
Time travel in general.
Yeah.
It's we always, you know, when we were doing our Doctor Who, we say, well, they handle a lot of things, but that's the whole point, is they have to force us, like, whenever you do time travel, you have to force us to stop believing in something.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard, and I think Doctor Who does it well, but I don't like when Star Trek takes me out when they do time travel. And the same goes for anything else. It's like, as soon as
Legends of Tomorrow, where they're going back and they're sleeping with Guinevere?
Yeah. And you know, I like the show and I like the way they handle time travel, but they have to handle time travel.
Yeah.
And ultimately, like, we have to suspend so much disbelief for that. So the science all around it could be pretty good. The storytelling could be really good. But we do have to stop, you know, we have to stop, like, thinking rationally just to handle time travel, because we know it hasn't happened. And if it hasn't happened already, it can happen.
Yeah.
Like, the idea that, like, at least traveling back in time. Like, if you could travel back and forth in time, like, one of two things would have happened. Peace on Earth or total destruction. Because a madman would have got a hold of it, came back in time, and just wiped everybody out. Or, you know, a very good person would have done the same thing.
Yeah.
Good intentions, bad intentions, but, you know,
Yeah.
So I just, you can't, it can't be handled.
Yeah.
You can watch it, spend disbelief, enjoy the story, which it was like, that's what I do with Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And, you know, the way they have to handle that by saying there's fixed points that you can't mess around with. Okay. And same thing, you know, with Legends is they say, well, you know, we've gone so off the rails, the world has changed, yeah. We have to fix it. But that's kind of a good point about it is they show you what could go wrong, but...
yeah, but it's not touched on for long. Right. It's like, oh, well, I'll go back and fix it.
Like, to be specific about that is when they take Cleopatra and Themyscira, like...
Yeah.
Why wouldn't that change everything?
Yeah.
In a time when they, traveling 40 miles would take 2 days, you've taken her to some random island that's...
no one knows about. They're still right. Fighting the Trojan War. Everything's going on over there, and you're the focal point of it.
That would... And you're telling me she wouldn't tell anybody or talk about it? And, like...
Yeah. One hit with the lasso of truth, and you know everything.
Right. And it's... They're just... What are they going to do?
Yep.
They're going to hang out, and then she's going to go back to, Troy? And yeah. She's not going to...
Go back up into the tower.
And everyone's going to be like, where have you been? Because it, you know...
Yeah.
Themyscira, who knows where it is, but it's got to be a couple days. A couple days in her time is going to be documented.
And, she'll be like, oh, I went to this place of all women, warriors, and now they're like, oh, that's a threat, and they're going to go invade
them. I mean, it's very specific, but that's a thing. Like, it's you can't... That's you suspend disbelief, and you go, okay, well, I'm just going to watch it and just...
I got you. You know? I'm with you.
So time travel in general is really, like... No matter how good they handle time travel, they always that's the point is they have to.
Yeah.
And it can never be handled well. Yeah. I mean, it's handled better than some, but it's always a problem.
Well, mine goes with a travel theme, my last one, but it's space travel on the whim that there's a better future and you can hibernate.
Yeah.
Like, you go to sleep for 90 years and then you travel to what you think is going to be a utopia. You're signing up for a mystery.
Yeah.
So, like, a movie I think of is Passengers.
Right. Oh, okay, yeah.
So Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence and hundreds of people go to sleep on this plane or on the ship, and Chris Pratt wakes up and he knows he's going to die. You know what I mean? And the ship breaks down. Like, he knows everyone's going to die. And what's he do? He wakes somebody up. That's like, I would never risk my future for the unknown on a whim and say, oh, well, you know. They've never colonized space, but now I'm going to be on the charter first flight to space, and they're going to put me asleep for 90 years. I think that's a bad idea.
And here, you know, it's crazy you bring that up. And I was always thinking of writing like a short story, science fiction short story, but I'm just going to actually just tell it here. And my idea was going to be
trademark,
TMTM, that they send a ship out for that purpose, colonization. They don't know exactly what's going to happen, but you know. Let's say we can somehow technologically figure out that the planet is okay for us. You know, science will have to be done when it gets there. You know, live in a pod until we can figure something out. So, at the time it's sent out, our technology is only so advanced so that they go into a deep sleep for, let's say, a couple hundred years. But in that time, we figure faster and light travel or something, and we pass it.
Oh.
And then we go and we colonize that planet. And then our, you know, we inevitably, as humans do, destroy, like, not destroy, but, you know, build corporations, you know, civilization takes over. And, you know, this crew of, like, 50 to 100 people get to the planet thinking they're going to be heroes, and they're the first, you know, extraterrestrial colonization, but somebody's already there, like,
I like it.
Shitting on the planet.
Yeah.
And then they have to deal with...
Breaks into war.
Yeah.
I like it. You should write it. Trademark.
TMTM.
Yeah, it's on here. Well, we came up with some great ones. Our group came up with some great ones. We'll have to do this for a good idea one, too.
Yeah.
We got that in the future, too.
I just don't know if people, you know, are positive.
Yeah, if we're going to be able to agree on what was a good idea.
Yeah.
Because I thought Snowpiercer was a movie, and I got shit on.
Yeah. So, I like Snowpiercer a lot. I thought that was a great movie.
I got a lot of laugh emojis, like, you're an idiot. So, it is what it is. The last thing you need to do if you're a new listener from our science fiction group, or if you're a new listener from another planet, you can follow us on all of our social medias, which is The Galaxy Wars on Twitter, No, Twitter, we're The Grays, T-H-E-G-R-Y-S, but The Galaxy Wars Podcast on everything else, Instagram, Facebook, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, everywhere else that podcasts are streamed. And we will be back next week with the Blade Runner 2049 review. See ya. All right.